We've all gathered here to honor the memory of Sidney Kurtz, and I just heard one of the Jewish war veterans say, it was an honor, he was a friend. And I think that that's a perfect way to summarize who Sid was. He was a friend to everybody, and it's so wonderful to see so many of his friends here to honor his life. From Ecclesiastes, for everything there is a season and a time for every experience under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot what has been planted. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to grieve and a time to dance. A time to throw stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to discard. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. Death has taken our beloved Sid. Our friends grieve in their darkened world. In their silence, there is lamentation. In their eyes, there is tears, there is loneliness. Lost in their sorrow, may they find the presence of loving friends. Hear them, O God, and be with them. For Sid's love that united us in life and which death cannot sever, for his companionship that we shared along life's path and which continues through the tenderness of memory, for the gifts of his heart and mind that brought us joy and happiness and is now a precious remembrance, for all these and more, we give our thanks to God. In this time of grief, we listen to the voice of our sacred scriptures that brings us the ever-new message of God's nearness. It tells us of our kinship with the Creator, in light as in darkness, in joy as in sorrow, in life as in death. Psalm 1. Happy are those who have not followed the counsel of the wicked, or taken the path of sinners, or joined the company of the insolent. Rather, the teaching of God is their delight, and they study that teaching day and night. They are like a tree planted beside streams of water that yield its fruit in season, whose foliage never fades, and whose fruit always flourishes. When I heard that Sidney Kurtz had died, I took out a eulogy that I gave over a year ago for his sister, Edith Brooke, Edie. I began her eulogy with a passage from Exodus Rabbah that I actually believe is even more fitting for Sid, as he was a merchant marine. The text reads, two ships were sailing in the night near the shore, one headed toward the open sea and the other headed toward the harbor. Everyone was cheering the outgoing ship, but very few cheered the incoming ship. A wise man observing this scene felt it to be a great contradiction. He said that the outgoing ship should not be cheered, for nobody knows what lies in wait for it, what stormy seas it may encounter, and how it would weather the storms during its voyage. But, he continued, everyone should cheer the incoming ship, since it has clearly reached the port safely, having concluded its journey in peace. Today we celebrate the conclusion of the journey of Sid Kurtz. This passage not only fits Sid because it is about ships and he was a merchant marine and he loved the ocean, but it fits him also because he was the kind of person who cheered for people when their ship had made it through the stormy weather. In fact, oftentimes he helped them through these stormy seasons. He was a compassionate and caring man. Take, for example, the books that Sid wrote. The first book, which I actually have right here, is The Jewish Rectangle, An American Adventure, and it is about how his family came to the United States and the trials and tribulations that they faced as an immigrant family in the U.S. And the second book was Alice, Broken Windows, Broken Dreams, and this was based on a true story about a woman named Alice and how she escaped from the concentration camp in Nazi Germany. Book number three was Marcel Singer, The Gentle Butcher of Hong Kyu. And this book was based on the true story of Marcel Singer, who also survived the Holocaust, and he did so by fleeing to China. Each one of these books is a story about how individuals were able to overcome incredible hardships. Sid wrote these stories because they were based on real people, and he wanted to cheer their incoming ship after it had gone through some stormy seas. His compassion for others is evident in these books, as well as the various articles he wrote for the Philadelphia Inquirer. As is obvious, in addition to Sid's passion for the ocean, he also had a passion for writing. In fact, there's a fourth book called The White Man's War that's not yet available, but it will be. However, it wasn't until he retired that he was able to pursue this passion due to various circumstances. As a young man, Sid was stricken with polio and was therefore unable to finish high school. Later on, Sid enlisted in the Merchant Marines because he wanted to help out with the war effort, despite the fact that he walked with a limp from polio. After he married his wife, Sylvia, who he loved very much, he still could not begin his career because he knew that he had a wife and eventually a family to support. But Sid was a family man, and he loved his sons, Stephen, Scott, and Stanley, very dearly. And he loved their wives, Karen, Pam, and Michelle, and their children, his grandchildren, Brian, Hillary, Joshua, Benjamin, Ethan, and Jenna. From camping and canoeing and skiing trips to skits with his grandchildren to big speeches that the paper would go all the way to the floor and roll on, the whole family enjoyed Sid's sense of humor and his ability to make every single person feel special and unique. One person who was special to Sid was his girlfriend, Sylvia Dobie. Over 10 years ago, Sylvia met Sid at a senior's luncheon at the JCC. Sylvia was friends with Edie, his sister, and every day the two of them would eat together and ultimately be the last ones to finish their meal because they were both slow eaters. And as they ate, they got to know each other, and over time, they grew a fondness for each other. His sister Edie was also a very special person in his life. She loved when he would come and visit her and read her his latest article in the Philadelphia Inquirer. This was especially important to her during the last few years of her life, but it was also especially important to him. Marilyn, another member of the family, was also close to Sid. From playing late-night pinochle games to helping her out when she needed it, Sid loved Marilyn like a sister. In addition to being a son, a younger brother, a husband, a father, and a friend, Sid was a merchant marine, a jeweler, a writer, and a huge baseball fan. The Phillies, of course. What we'll remember most about him, though, is his positive outlook on life. He was always joking and smiling. He was a warm, caring, and compassionate man who will live on forever in our memories and in our hearts. At this time, I'd like to call upon Sylvia to say a few words.
Okay, hello, everybody. I'm glad that you could all come. I know that you all love Sid, as everybody did, as I did. Whenever I had to write anything of importance or meaningful, I couldn't do it, so I would give it to Sid to write for me. But now I needed to write this as a tribute to Sid. So we first met at the senior lunch program where Edie and I ate together at the Jewish Community Center. One day I noticed that a new man was sitting at our table. I suspected it was Edie's brother because I had heard Edie talk about him, and Edie asked him to join us. When I first began to be aware of the kind of person he was when he gave me a short story that he had written about the people at our table. The story was extremely funny and at the same time poignant. I realized that he had a great sense of humor, but he also caught the soul of everyone at the table. I was drawn to his friendliness. He gave me 10 years of kindness and love, All through the years, I was included in his family's activities. His family was always wonderful to me. They made me feel like one of them, for which I have always been grateful. Sid was wonderful with my family as well. My granddaughter called him Grandpa Sid. My relationship with Sid began with a true friendship and gradually developed into more. As we started to date, we began to develop rituals. Every Saturday morning, we had breakfast at Ponzio's in the Haddon Room, and we would take home with us an order of bagels and lox for Sunday brunch. While eating, we would look for three-star movies in the weekend section of the Philadelphia Inquirer. And in the evening, we would go to the Olive Garden. We would sit at the bar, and I would have a Manhattan, and Sid would have lemonade. Then we would go into the dining area for dinner. On Sunday mornings, we had our brunch. Sid bought a lovely pair of candle holders in which he lit candles. Afterwards, we would see the movies we had picked or get together with our friends or family. Sid and I mostly had a weekend relationship, and I looked forward to our time the rest of the week. The depth and gratification that we gave to each other on those weekends was immeasurable. Most of you here knew parts of Sid, but I got to know more of him than most. Sid gave me the best years of my life. His positive attitude was very supporting to me. He had a constant sense of humor and always knew how to lighten any situation. As you all know, he was very creative, and in our relationship, he was always bringing me special little surprises, such as little gifts and notes. We didn't have to have conversations all the time. Just being together was always fine. He was the sweetest, kindest, most wonderful man I ever knew, and I was lucky to be the one to have him. My love for him did not die with him. I will miss him and love him forever.
I'd now like to call upon Edith Kalish for some words.
What should I say about Sid? One of the things that took up a chunk of Sid's time over the years is a group called the Good Timers, a JCC senior singles group. I had the opportunity to know Sid well since he worked closely with me as co-editor of our newsletter when I was president for 6 years. Sid was so special. His easygoing manner, his tolerance of accepting people as they were, his wonderful sense of humor, his compassion, his humility and honesty, all these and more made him a treasured favorite with our members. Sid was a reliable good worker, not only with his excellent writing, but also at times filling in with a program about his beloved Philadelphia. He was also active in most of our social activities. Often, he was the only male member during some of our get-togethers, and his good-naturedness came shining through, whether a waiter called him one of the girls or referred to him as being with his harem or some otherwise cracks. Sid took it in stride, and he laughed with the rest of us. Sid was indeed one of a kind. We will miss him sorely. Goodbye, Sid. Our love goes with you.
And now I'd like to call upon Sid's son, Steve.
I remember the days of baseball. You were a big baseball fan, and you introduced us to the sport young. Unfortunately, baseball wasn't my sport. Oh, sure. I like to watch it on TV, and at the many games we saw at the Vet Stadium, especially because it meant spending time with you. Thank you. And I like to play. I just wasn't much good at it. You encourage us to join the Little League. I played right field, no man's land, where balls are seldom hit. One fine afternoon, I was daydreaming in right field, and the crowd started yelling, "Go, Steve, get it." I looked up, I raised my glove, took a few hurried steps forward, and smack, it landed in my glove. It was the kind of wonderful accident you read about in books. And you were there, cheering louder than anyone. You were so proud. Days later, when I had the courage to tell you of my fumbling catch, you didn't waver or criticize. You already knew, and you are still proud. I remember your unwavering support. I remember the mimosa tree in our backyard. It's about 2 stories tall, standing with its unique finger-like leaves and pink and white blooms in the springtime. When Scott and I were old enough, you built a treehouse in the mimosa tree. The treehouse became a gathering place for neighborhood kids, a clubhouse, a coveted place for hide and seek. You loved that it served to bring neighborhood kids together. I remember that friends and community were and are important. I remember the nights spent on the couch, watching movies on TV with my head in your lap. It was a comforting place to be. I shared your taste in movies and we'd watch together. You'd rub and scratch my back till I fell asleep. Somehow, magically, I'd wake up in my room the next morning, wondering how the movie ended. I remember your gentle caring. I remember your anger, your frustration, and your futility. No, that must have been someone else. Oh, yes, it was your dry sense of humor that I remember, which apparently I've inherited. Because on the fingers of one hand, I can count the times I remember you being truly angry at anything. You reserved your anger for only the most urgent situations. Everything else you approached with compassion and humor. I remember the mishpacha meetings, you and Mom hosted at the house. 150 or so family members would converge on the house to everyone's delight. While the adults discussed matters important to the family at the time, we kids played outside. Young and old alike spent hours with each other, playing, laughing, loving. I remember that family is and was important. Family always came first, even when it meant some very difficult and heart-wrenching decisions. I remember the smell of the lilacs that you would pick from the tree by the driveway and bring into the house. It made Mom smile, and I knew you loved her dearly. I remember how proud you were when I graduated college. With circumstances at the time making it impossible for you to finish college yourself, I felt you were living vicariously through me. And yet, in spite of your lack of schooling, your self-taught writing skills allowed you to pursue and attain your lifelong dream of becoming a writer. I remember it's important to pursue your dreams, no matter how long it takes. I remember your joy at my wedding, the birth of my children, their bar and bat mitzvahs. You reveled in each family event. You tried not to miss an opportunity to see Hillary dance, Josh act, or Brian behind the scenes. Did I mention that family was important? I remember going to events with you and your friends, whether it was at the JCC or McCore, and it seemed there was no one who did not know you. You endeared yourself to them and they to you. Everyone seemed compelled to tell me how much they enjoyed your company. I remember you treated everyone the way you would want to be treated, but didn't expect anything in return. I remember how you cared for the ailing in our family and visited friends in the hospital, working through the suffering of others. You sought to comfort them and bring them dignity, even in the face of long sicknesses, hardship, and ultimately death. There were so many. And I remember, You brought your courage and resolve to every situation. I remember your yearning to do more, to do better, especially for your family and friends. And certainly, life did not always deal you a fair hand. But your yearning did not make you unhappy with what you did not have. Quite the contrary. Whatever life dealt, you naturally found the good in all of it, and lived your life, as if what you had was everything you needed. If you yearned for something, you translated your yearning into hopes and dreams, and set your energies toward achieving those dreams. And along the way, you left love and caring in your wake, affecting everyone you came in contact with. But most of all, I remember your love. Whether you were playing ball, vacationing, skiing, playing tennis, visiting the sick, laughing at your own jokes, or plucking chickens, you brought to every task your never-ending spirit, enthusiasm, positive outlook, and let's not forget that dry sense of humor that we all loved so much. You set a wonderful example, one I will spend the rest of my life trying to emulate. Thank you. I love you.
I'm now going to read something that Scott wrote for his father. Who is Sidney Kurtz? Dad signed his emails to the family with Love, Sid, Dad, Grandpa, Rusty, Uncle Rusty, etc. Who was this man who had so many more aliases than James Bond? As a father, I learned so much from him just by the way he lived his life. One of my earliest memories of Dad was when he would read to us in the living room or sit in the kitchen in the evening reading a book. I learned the importance of reading and learning. He and Mom always encouraged us to excel in school. By the way, the evening reading was usually accompanied by some chocolate tasty cake cupcakes, but he used to say everything in moderation. Starting a family relatively late in life didn't slow Dad down. In his 40 years, Dad learned right along with us how to ski and continued to do so for another 20-something years. Exercise and health were important to him. I, too, started a family late in life. I hope I can keep the pace that Dad kept. Those who met Dad later in life know him as a writer, but he spent most of his working years as a jeweler and watchmaker. And although we enjoyed going to work with him occasionally and playing in the now old-fashioned adding machine, Dad did not enjoy these jobs nearly as much as he enjoyed writing. He did what he had to do to support the family. I didn't appreciate the significance of this until much later. Dad's hard work launched us into adulthood with everything we needed to make it. He took only pride in our successes, but deserved much credit as well, and I am truly grateful to him. When I moved out of Dad's house in Voorhees, I moved to Mount Laurel, minutes away from where Dad worked, at the Morristown Mall. On many a Saturday, I would meet him at the mall for lunch. I don't remember what we talked about on all those Saturdays. Probably work, family, friends, and yes, dating. At that point, we were both bachelors at different stages of our lives. The important thing about our lunches was that we spent time together, just the two of us. What I loved so much about Dad in more recent years was the way he was with Benjamin. He didn't see Benjamin as his autistic grandson. He saw Benjamin as a fun-loving, red-headed grandson whom he enjoyed greatly. Dad enjoyed just watching Ben play, and when Ben sat in his lap, Dad would beam with joy. Dad was able to be concerned about Ben without letting that concern dominate his thoughts about him and without interfering with his connection to Ben and his love for Ben. This meant so much to both Pam and me. Knowing how many people are speaking today, I'll keep it short. There are so many things to say and stories that I could write about Dad. So many stories that I could write a book about Dad. Oh, I forgot. Dad already did that. So for the sake of brevity, I'll yield the remainder of my time to the gentleman to California. And I'd now like to call upon Stan.
Suddenly, the rabbi feels like a sister to me. I'm not sure why. while I'm at it, I wanted to thank the rabbi for speaking so well today, and also for during the week that we just had with my dad, calling and checking in and making sure we were all okay. And I just appreciate that. There was some things that the rabbi shared. If it's okay, that I'll mention one of the things. It was a story, a strange little story, but poignant, that had to do with a little coffee chat group that she has with other religious cohorts, I guess. And one was a priest who was sharing stories about how to handle mice with humanity. And yeah, it's kind of strange, I know, but, you know, and he talked about how he would capture mice and try to bring them outside, the ones that got in, and keep them safe, and a lot of times they would end up coming back. And then another Protestant minister, talked about how they would spill vinegar and how vinegar worked a lot, but sometimes they came back as well. And she said, this is pretty easy, guys. I don't know why you don't do what I do. I just put a little yarmulke on their head and bar mitzvah them, and they never come back. That was Dad's. That wasn't mine. That was Dad's. So now on to what I have written here. It's kind of hard to talk at such a time. There's so much to say, you know, and I was thinking that I was going to give a eulogy today. And as I'm sitting here, and everybody walking by, and everything that, all the wonderful things that everybody said, it was like one eulogy after the next. And I was honored even more just to be here with you and hear your stories and hear how much you missed them and hear about your pain and your grief. And I'm grateful for all of you to be here. And I'm grateful for your relationships with my dad. They were so important. I wrote a couple things because I didn't want to forget. They're right here, just a couple little. Yeah. All right. I'll leave that there. At my wedding, my father did that. And it's Steve's wedding, and it's Scott's wedding. You know, why change the humor when you can change the crowd? That'll sink in later. In a hospital bed, unable to walk, he sat for months with a disease that prevented him from doing what he loved and ultimately would affect the rest of his life. Now, this sounds like his last hospital stay, but it was actually a warm summer day in 1947. Sid was laying near an open window and can hear kids and balls hitting bats and yelling, and even people sliding into a base. This was the start of many experiences that would slow him down from pursuing his passions. You know, his life was these hurdles. And he was in bed for months, and the year after he had to learn how to walk again. And ultimately his body and his dreams were affected for the rest of his life. Many people died from polio, but not my dad. And he never complained about it. This was something that was just amazing. Through all of these things, he never complained. Sid's mom had him learn a craft to support himself. And while he couldn't stand for long times, she thought that he could learn to be a watchmaker, a jeweler, a career that he remained with until he retired, so to speak. Let's change gears for a second. My dad was wearing a watch, this watch here, when he passed away. And he had this for a long time. And you might wonder what a watchmaker, a jeweler, dies with on his arm, as far as a watch. So I thought I'd tell you about this watch. On the front of it, it says Time, as in Time Magazine, as in the free watch that you get when you subscribe to Time Magazine. And if you look closely, you'll find that the fake gold all around is pretty much gone, and that the band has been replaced at least once. And that was my dad. He lived so meagerly. It was just unbelievable. My wife just came in the night before last, and I took his car to the airport. Sorta, barely, you know, but it got me there. This car is 19 years old. And because my wife was coming in, I wanted to take it to the car wash. And I swear, when I pulled up, the attendant leaned in and said, "Are you serious?" I said, "Yeah. And I'm not kidding you. He gave it to me for half price, and I took it." Back to Dad. When he came back from the Merchant Marines, he fell in love with my mother, and he started a wonderful life. But as with many things, there are always two sides, to good and to bad. The obligations of marriage and raising a family meant that he worked really hard in retail every day, and in many cases, it was a job that he really didn't like. In 1966, he started having difficulty digesting food and later diagnosed with Crohn's disease, an often severe and debilitating autoimmune condition where the immune system attacks the intestines, as if they're a foreign invader. Many people have to undergo bowel surgery for this disorder. Sid just quietly suffered with it. My nephew Brian, just 2 days ago, said, "I had no idea that Grandpa suffered from any disease." In 1967, at 44 years old, he begrudgingly was diagnosed with another, possibly even more painful, systemic disorder. This one was his third child, me. The ones that laugh harder know me better. Another new element to distract his chances of realizing his dreams, and an added stress to his other conditions. A lot of people tell me it wasn't my fault. And in reality, it wasn't. And I really don't blame myself for it. And you can join me in blaming my brothers, actually. I mean, let's face it, if they weren't such good kids, my somewhat aging parents wouldn't have had the energy on that fateful night in 1967, doing one of their favorite things. Going down to the shore. It's perverted people. Get it. That's so funny. I just ejected something down there, but don't worry, I'll just lean. I know my father loved me, and at least to some degree back then. But I was another hurdle for him, and he wasn't looking for another child at the time. He wasn't all that equipped to handle me back then. My energy, my youthfulness, my attention deficit disorder. That's true, you can laugh, it's true. I was different from everyone else, but I was too selfish to realize that my father was struggling with the same type of dilemma. He was different as well. In 1984, I was a sophomore in high school, failing most of my classes and completely uninterested in formal education. Besides being taken home by police for driving my brother's car while completely intoxicated, grieving my dying mother, remember, I was about 15. I'd also been arrested twice, although, just besides that, although some of them were for pretty funny reasons. That summer at 84, my dad and I were meeting to discuss my dismissal from high school in front of a judge and the vice principal, who asked us to sign a form that said that they did everything they could for me. And my father, perhaps for the very first time that I was able to recognize, said, "We're not signing anything. It's your fault. You can find a way to reach him." This was the first time in my teen years, at least, that I realized what my dad was about. And I really respected my dad. We never fought again ever after that. After my mother died, my father struggled for some time to get on his feet. and neither of us really knew how to mourn back then. But the struggle with that pain made us both change. We had been able to start moving closer. He began to start moving closer to his dreams and be more expressive with his feelings. And my father can only remember his father, for example, hugging him once. And that was after he came back from the Merchant Marines, and never again. From the pain of losing my mom, and remember, everything has two sides. I woke up and became more aware, more perceptive, and more focused. These are all gifts that she left us, gifts that she left me. There was pain and there were gifts. I know you all are grieving heavily for my father. I heard that as you walked by and talked to me. I hope you, as I am, are open to that pain so that you can look through the pain to find the gifts that my dad is giving us, because they're there the same way that they were for my mom. Again, everything has two sides. When Dad turned 70, a mere 11 years ago, he wanted to put a family tree together to pass to us and the generations. The tree turned out to be Rusty, a short story, which is about 100 pages of a family history. My father became addicted to researching and writing from then on. The story later turned out to be his first book, The Jewish Rectangle, and the rest you know from there. My father, through all the adversity and all the challenges, all the things working against him, finally realized his dreams of being a writer. He had become a loving, warm, compassionate person. He was an old dog who did learn new tricks and then taught us how to do it. In time, everyone can live their dreams. And there are two sides to everything. We're all in pain today, but please look for the teachings and his spirit, because they're in there. Because if you don't look closely, you might miss it and lose the opportunity to change your life, as I did. Before I close, I want to thank Sylvia. My father loved you dearly, and he was already scared about not losing out of his dreams, and so he may not have been able to give you every day. Gave you every weekend, pretty much. But you were the spine to his books, the thing that held the pages together, for which he could not have done as well if you weren't there. We're grateful for your love to him and to us, and we're happy to have you in our family. Not like family, in our family. I love you, and we're your family, and you're our family now. I also want to say how proud I am of our family. We're all so different, as you may know, and we worked perfectly together these past weeks. We were all active, healing my father and ourselves, and helping to keep his dignity and his soul in place the way he wanted, and we did. I love you guys. I love all of you, and I don't think I felt closer to you than I do now. To my cousins Howard and Jeff for coming by and supporting us. Howard can't be here today, his wife Lisa is. Marilyn, you were struggling in your own hospital, calling us, and we were talking back and forth, and he loved you very much. I know you would have wanted to been there, is what I wrote down, but I said that already. Kenny, my dad, adored you, and he loved your humor and everything you added to the house. Everything. All of it. It was all learning. It was all good. I want to thank my wife for taking care of things at home so that I could be with my dad this week. I love you. Thank you. He loved you very much, too. And my family all loves you. And if it wasn't for you, they probably wouldn't be able to figure out how to talk to me. dad, well, actually, no. There's a few other people I wanted to thank. Obviously, the good timers and the JCC, and the people from the synagogue, and family and friends, and so many people that are here, that your categories and classifications, the Merchant Marines in the back, and everybody that I'll miss is just unbelievable. And I also wanted to thank the Philadelphia Inquirer, and Forrest is here, who's his present editor, one of a few. You know, when I got to Dad's place and I listened to his answering machine, this is just yesterday, the day before, Forrest had called 3 separate times checking in on my dad because he was concerned. And I think he was approving another article, you know. I'm just grateful. I don't know where you are, Forrest, but, you know, I told you this 2 or 3 times already. I'm so grateful for what the Philadelphia Inquirer has allowed Dad to do, which has touched so many people, and to spread himself, his teachings, and his soul to so many. Please send our regards back to them. And Dad, you know, my eyes are open. I'm yours always. And I'm forever grateful for being part of your legacy of kindness, compassion, knowledge, and learning. You are absolutely an inspiration to all of us to reinvent yourself so many times against so much adversity and never complaining. And never even complaining in the end when I know you were in pain and you didn't admit to it to the doctor. What's up with that? No, it was just absolutely amazing. And I'll miss you dearly. And I was so glad to be with you. And I love you. Thank you. There's a song I came across, and I don't know if it's going to play. If it does, great. If it doesn't, then that's fine. That kind of captures the spirit of my father and the idea that there are 2 sides to the pain and to the learning. And if it's here, it'll play. If not, then we'll keep moving.
You with the sadness, don't be discouraged, though I realize it's hard to take courage in a world full of people. You can lose sight of it all, and the darkness there inside you makes you feel so small. But I see your true color shining through. See your true colors. That's why I love you so. Don't be afraid to let them show your true.
You know, everyone who spoke today, everyone said about what a wonderful man Sid was and how much of a good friend he was. But I think the one of the best legacies he's going to leave behind is that his sense of humor was passed on to all 3 of his sons. And it's a really beautiful thing because every time that any of us laugh, especially in the presence of these 3, we will always remember Sid and the sense of humor that he had. Our service continues with Psalm 23. Please join me if you know this. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He guideth me in straight paths for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Birth is a beginning, and death a destination. But life is a journey, a going, a growing, from stage to stage. From childhood to maturity and youth to age, from innocence to awareness and ignorance to knowing, from foolishness to discretion, and then perhaps to wisdom, from weakness to strength, or strength to weakness, and often back again, from health to sickness, and back we pray to health again, from offense to forgiveness, from loneliness to love, from joy to gratitude, from pain to compassion, and grief to understanding, from fear to faith, from defeat to defeat to defeat, until looking backward or ahead, we see that victory lies not at some high place along the way, but in having made the journey, stage by stage, a sacred pilgrimage. Birth is a beginning, and death a destination, but life is a journey, a sacred pilgrimage made stage by stage, from birth to death, to everlasting life. We rise for the memorial chant, El Malei Rachamim.
El Malei Rachamim Shochein Bamromim Hametzei Menucha Nechona Tachat Kanfei Shechina Im Kedoshim U'Teharim Kezor Harakia Mazhirim Et Nishmat Yishaya Zelig Baruch Shehalach Bal harachamim yasireu beseter kenafav le'olamim v'yitror b'tzoha chayim et nishmato Adonai u'nachalato v'yanuach m'shalom Al mishkavo v'nomar Amen.
Compassionate God, eternal spirit of the universe, grant perfect rest in your sheltering presence to Sidney Kurtz, who has entered eternity. O God of mercy, let him find refuge in the shadow of your wings, and let his soul be bound up in the bond of everlasting life. God is his inheritance. May he rest in peace. As together we say, Amen.